The phrase mama knows best, everybody's heard it. And we all know it isn't true. Not all the time, anyway. And if you think mama always knows best, well, I'm not a shrink, so I'm not gonna tell you, but you should probably go see one. Honestly, she can't be any more correct than the deepest thinkers, and they're not correct 100%. The fact of the matter is that you probably know what's best for yourself more than anyone else, as long as you take the time to stop and think about it. If you do things on a whim without thinking things through first, you're gonna get what you deserve, seriously. And I know that sounds rash, but what would your argument be? And still, you know better than anyone else what's best for you when you think about it. Maybe not consciously, but definitely subconsciously. You know when you have that nagging voice, that it's not even a voice, it's just really a feeling that keeps telling you to do something over and over and over again. And you know, you just somehow innately know it's the right thing to do. And sometimes you don't do it and you regret it. Rarely, and I mean very rarely, you don't do it and it turns out okay. But you don't know what would have happened if you had done it. But when you follow that voice and it turns out to be the right choice, which is more than 50% of the time, are you really surprised? And then you start second guessing yourself and you're like, did somebody come back from the dead? Was it my great uncle that died? Or was God talking to me? Am I psychic? I mean, there's so many things that we all think because we always have to have answers. That's how I am anyway. I always have to know. That's why my mom called me a question box when I was little. I always had to know everything. Well, and some people call me a know-it-all, so. But the truth is that reality tells us that oftentimes our subconscious knows more about what's right for us than we do when we stop and think about it. And sometimes thinking about things actually ends up confusing us even more. And always having to know the real answer, the right answer, and needing to find out all the answers. Some people call that OCD. I've been like that too, with different things around the house, having to have everything perfectly in its place. But that gets in the way of other things too in life. Finding the right career, you know, finding the right apartment, finding the right partner, finding the right, and that's the secret, the right, what's the right one when it's not perfect. So with this mindset that I had, went to school many times, as you might know, and for different things, and I finally ended up getting a degree in creative writing. And that was due also to a medical situation that happened, but I finally went back to what I had been practicing far, far back, something that I really loved, that I was doing in elementary school because I loved it so much, and it was writing. My favorite book growing up, simply because you asked, was The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein. If you have a chance, read it. It is a children's book, so it's a quick read. But I've purchased that book probably 5 times in my life. I've read it many more times than that. And the strangest thing is each time I read it at a different point in my life, I get a completely different message. But that was my first book that I really, really liked. I mean, I grew up with Dr. Seuss, you know. But this was my first real book that impacted me. And again, it was called The Giving Tree. But I've always loved reading. And so after going to school to become a lawyer, to become a teacher, to become a, you know, HR professional, all these things, and I finally just went back to writing and got a degree in creative writing. I learned how to write novels correctly, commercials, screenplays, APA papers, MPA papers, articles, simple things like email letters, right? And when I graduated with my writing skills, I looked everywhere trying to find a job that I would like to use those skills. And the jobs that I could find would use those skills, but they were secondary skills to the job itself. You know what I mean? And I was thinking, I have a range of writing skills. It should be easy to find a job. But it wasn't at all. And it made it harder, I think, that I had this OCD thing, because I was single focused on writing. So by some strange twist of events, you know, I told you about how I accidentally bought the home that we're living in now last year. Right about that time, I also enrolled in a bunch of bizarre classes online. And then I ended up in a, oddly enough, class. I was learning about NPL, which is Neuro-Linguistic Programming. And that was interesting. And that led me into learning about hypnosis. And hypnosis, it's very much more than intriguing. There's a lot more mental education to it than one might think. Because people tend to hear about hypnosis and believe it's some sort of a party gimmick for entertainment, right? And sure it is. I mean, it's used for that sometimes. And some people think that they're going to go learn it, and then if they're like really geeky looking and unattractive and, you know, have a hard time picking up dates or whatever, that they can learn hypnosis and go get anybody they want. Let me save you some money. That doesn't happen. Anyway, so, but there's a lot more to it than that. A lot. And it's even used for like crime scene investigations. in helping victims remember things that otherwise they wouldn't have been able to remember. Mostly because when they're being investigated, that they're being questioned, they're uptight, they're anxious, right? And the structure of hypnosis actually helps them calm down so that they can think more clearly. So that just stands to reason. And it isn't perfect. Hypnosis isn't perfect. And everyone's heard about how memories are being implanted with hypnosis. And I'm not going to say it doesn't happen, because it most definitely does. But that's when the person that's hypnotizing does not know how to do it correctly. The questions that are being asked are not being asked correctly. And the information is being planted in their memory. So they're asking things like, well, do you remember seeing a person that was this? Instead of saying, describe the person you saw, right? And so those false memories are being implanted. Anyway, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about being able to use the information that I've learned from all of my hypnotic studies. And believe me, there have been much more than you can even imagine. A ton more. I've taken, a lot. I've been studying from sunup to sundown and all in between and into the hours of the night. And with all of this, and like I said, it's more mental. It's almost like being a mentalist, if you know what that is, and maybe you've seen it on Star Search or whatever. But being a mentalist is a tricky thing, and it's sort of like that. And it's using like meditative skills as well. So then I started thinking, I had this weird, I don't even know what the word is, a totally bizarro feeling, I'll just say that. That maybe I don't really want to be a hypnotist either. And I've put a lot of money and a lot of work into this. So I don't just want to throw it to the wind, right? And I love it. But then I got the most amazing idea ever. And the best part is, it totally goes with the title of Waking Lions. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you the most ironic part of what has brought me to where I am today. Because now, everything seems to be working like magic. Welcome back. That was a ton of fun, wasn't it? Of course it was. Okay, so I was talking about my magic inspiration, right? So, okay, here's the hilarious part. I don't even know how many companies I've started. I've started Cinderella to the Rescue, a cleaning company. I started a virtual assistant job. I had people offer to buy the name and I didn't know how to sell it. It was sad. I didn't do anything with it because I didn't know, so it just kind of sat there. Anyway, ignorance. For somebody that's a know-it-all, I'm pretty ignorant sometimes. But of all the companies that I've tried to start, so many I don't even know their names, I've always failed. In fact, if I had all the money I put into previous business startups, I could probably retire off of it just by investing the money now, but I didn't. I was trying to run before I could walk. Oh, scrap that. I was trying to fly before I could crawl. I didn't know the first thing about advertising, and it killed me every single stinking time. And I tried to learn about advertising, but you don't know what you don't know. I didn't know where to go to look to learn. And sure, you could go to the internet. That's how I learned most things, is on the internet. But I just didn't know. Maybe I'm just so fearful that I'm afraid to go looking. I don't know. But it just dredged out and killed it every time. So, here's the funniest part. Oh my gosh. Okay, brace yourself, and I hope you're sitting down. Because the position that I've decided, I told you I was going to tell you about this position that I've created for myself. Take a deep breath. Is advertising, sort of, in a way, more or less, via media. Okay, so I'm going to be using the skills that I've created and learned as a writer, right? And I'm going to use that to help promote people in the field of hypnosis, meditation, mindfulness, Reiki, chakras, all of these different types of elements in mental skills that can help other people. And I'm going to be helping the professionals and clients come together. Isn't that cool? I mean, it's weird. I don't even know what I don't know what I'd be called, but so because I don't know how to advertise correctly and get people to entrust me with helping them. Everybody wants to know, well, what's in it for you? What's in it for you? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? But I'll get to that in a second. Because they're all skeptical. And I'm not charging them. Okay, so I have 3 bookshelves of books. The majority of them are personal growth books. A portion are success principle type books. Stephen Covey, Napoleon Hill, Robert Kiyosaki, Jack Canfield, just all of these guys talking about success and self-improvement. And now I've got a couple shelves for hypnosis too. And one of my oldest books that I keep coming back to, because there's a few of them I keep coming back to, and I don't know why, but this one that I just keep coming back to it time and again, is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Now, anyone that remembers The Secret, it was Rhonda Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E. There might be an S on the end. I don't remember. And I believe it was 2005. She came up with this big idea. She's from Australia. She came up with this big idea. It was on TV. It was everywhere. That all you have to do is think about something and you can have it. And just so you know, right now, I looked it up online the other day. She has over 100 million free dollars from this venture that she took off on. So, I mean, it works. It worked for her anyway. The thing is that the way she was teaching it or the way it was distributed on the show, it had Reverend Beckwith. It had, what's his name? Probst. Anyway, it had a bunch of motivational speakers, like, you know, building her up with this, the secret. But what they didn't tell you was that you had to work. You actually had to work. You couldn't just think about it and manifest it and it came to be, because that nothing happens like that. But the reason I'm mentioning this is because the concept of the secret actually came from Think and Grow Rich. Except Napoleon Hill teaches you that you need to work toward it. And he teaches you how to implant it in your mind subconsciously. And on page 22, in fact, of the book, and that's my favorite number. Well, my second, it's one of my two favorite numbers. My first is 8, because sideways it means infinity. But my second one is 22. And he gives some really simple criteria, which is a way of, however you want to look at it, habit forming, you can call it. You can call it subliminal message implanting. You can call it brainwashing, if you want to go that way. Whatever you want to call it doesn't really even matter. You can call it chicken soup if you want. But it's just putting the thoughts in your head so hard that they're there. Okay. So anyway, it gives these steps. The first one is, and it's only like some really short steps. The first one is fixing in your mind the exact amount of money that you desire. Sounds easy, sounds far-fetched, right? I agree. And then determine what you intend to give for return of the money. For the money. That's the part the secret never mentioned. Nothing's for free. And come on, you've heard that. Everybody's heard that. Nothing is for free. Nothing is for free. I mean, even these people I'm going to be talking to, these professionals. And granted, I'm doing work. I mean, because of the video side of it and all of that, I'm the one that's going to be doing the closed captioning, which takes hours. I'm the one that's going to be putting all the video together and the sound together and making sure the sound is right, making sure the coloring is correct, and making sure that it's audited correctly and the score is right and all of these. It's going to take hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. It's going to take a lot of work. So I'm not getting it for free. I'm investing in these professionals. The professionals might think they're getting it for free. They're not. They're not paying for it with money. They're having to sit down, fill out some questions. They're donating time, or they're providing time. Because let's face it, however they fill out the questions that I've given them, however completely they filled out the questions that I've given them, however well the interview goes online, that's their publicity. So if they do a half-assed job, ooh, in fact, I'm going to tell you a story really quick. I heard this back in school, and it totally makes sense. There was this totally rich guy, really rich guy. And he found this up-and-coming architect. And he said, I want you to build me a house on that hill right there. And he points out this hill across the way. The architect looks at it and goes, okay, yeah, I can see that. It's going to take me a minute to get up there. You know, the road's not real clear. There's kind of a dirt road I got to get up there on. That's going to cost you. The guy says, oh, that's not a big thing. Money's not an issue. I just want a really nice house. And the guy says, okay, well, what kind of materials do you want to be made of? And the rich man says, I don't know that much about, you know, building houses and materials and things, but I want the best, the hardest wood, you know, for the framework. I want the nicest lawn. I want the best flooring. I want Berber carpets. I want real wood work in there, not this cheap paneling, you know, this cheap-ass shit. Sorry for the French, but I don't really speak French. You know what I'm talking about. I want incredibly crafted corners. I want stability. I want triple paned glass in my windows. I want big windows, airy views. I just want it to be the best of everything that I possibly could want. In fact, just pretend it's going to be for you. Pretend it's your house, and what would you want? If you do that, it's going to be gorgeous. I just know it will. And the guy says, okay, I got you. How long do I have to build this house? And the owner says, well, I'll give you a year. That should be enough, right? And the guy says, yeah, a year. He says, okay, well, I'll check back in a year. And he goes back to his other house. You know, he's got a couple houses and vacation spots and stuff. But this is going to be his, like, house, where he's going to retire and live out his life, is what he's told this architect or construction guy. So contractor, I guess, is what he would be. So the contractor goes out and goes to this place and starts figuring, wow, okay. He says money's not an issue. I will tell him that I'm getting this really good wood for the frame. But I know this guy, we call him Shorty, and he gets some seconds that I can get for a really good deal. And I can just pocket the money that's extra. So he goes off and gets this really good deal. And they're seconds, you know, they've been shoddy. They're handed down, they're leftovers from other construction deals and stuff. And he puts up the frame. And after a bit, you know, he's looking at it and he goes, that doesn't look half bad. Yeah. So he goes out and get some bricks for the outside of the walls. And they look decent. They're older. You know, they've been sitting out for a while. So air and dirt and water and stuff has gotten inside of the bricks through the holes inside. And they've been worn from the inside out. So they're not as strong as normal bricks. And he gets them at a discount. Pockets the money. The extra money. And then he does this with everything. He gets deals, and gets all this money. Well, then when he's all finished, well, and periodically the guy would come by and just kind of look at it from afar, you know, from the same place they were at before. And they go, wow, that looks really nice. And he's like, yeah, it's coming along. I'm going to be done, you know, in time. And the guy says, well, it looks like it's coming along pretty well. Do you think you can get it done faster? The contractor says, oh, easily. I can get it done in probably half the time because I'm so good. So he tells me he can get it done in 6 months. He says, oh, that's awesome. So he does. He actually gets it done in 6 months. At the end of the 6 months, he calls the owner up and he says, you know, hey, the house is done. Come in, you know, take a gander. The guy says, well, I'm in Europe right now. I'm going to be here for a bit. I've got some important things to get handled, but when I'm done, I'll come back and have a look. And the guy says, okay. He goes, but here, let me pay you anyway. So he goes ahead and sends him the money. And when he, and the guy goes off on vacation. The contractor goes off on vacation. Spends all of his money. Gambles, you know, Las Vegas. Ah! That's a good time. Not to bore you. Okay, tidbit of information. I danced at the Stardust. That was a fun time. I'll tell you about it later. It was a long time ago. I don't think the Stardust is even there anymore. Anyway. So in the end, the story is that the owner comes back. Gets the guy, you know, he comes back from his vacations. And the guy's like, oh, what do you think? And the guy's like, well, the owner's like, well, I'm going to give you a huge bonus because you did such a great job. And the guy's like, yes, bonus. And then he doesn't feel bad. He blew all the money. And the owner says, yeah. He goes, I really like it. And he goes up and he looks through the house and looks at the carpets, looks at the walls, and just looks over the whole thing. And he goes, you know, it's really nice. I'm going to let you have it. That's your bonus. You can have this house. Of course, the moral of the story is, well, in layman terms, don't rip people off. But put into it what you want to get out of it. If he'd have really done a really good job for this guy with a lot of money, he'd have been paving the way for his future. The guy with a lot of money, I'm sure, had a lot of friends that had money. And they would have used him on projects of their own. And he could have been set for life. But he screwed himself. So, on that note, I'm going to let you go for a second. And I'm going to come back and talk to you about how moving ahead with the secret and the rules that Napoleon Hill gives as far as giving intention and giving something in return for what you get. That's always important, and that's a very important thing to keep in mind in life. And these businessmen or people that rip people off and want to take more than what they're giving, shame on them. And it will come back to get them later, because they're not going to be able to deal that same thing again, like the builder, like the contractor. You can bet this guy, this big rich guy, had a lot of contacts. And he would have gotten a lot further had he done a good job. So enjoy this next commercial, and I'll talk to you in a minute about the other two steps, and then we'll wrap it up. Welcome back again. By the way, this is MJ. I don't think I mentioned that before, but I'm sure if you're here, you already know that. And this is Waking Lions. So what we were talking about was Napoleon Hill, right? We were talking about, the first thing he said was to determine the exact amount of money you desire that you want to have. So you can't just say, I want to have a bunch of money, or, you know, I want to have $100, which you could do. And The Secret talked about that too, but that's just kind of, it's not really even that important. I mean, it's important that you do that, but that's not, everybody has an easy time doing that. That's not the hard part. It's believing that you're going to have it. That's the hard part, because how can you believe you're going to have something if you don't actually see it, right? Aha. Okay. So we talked about that, and that was the first step. And then determining what you intend to give in return for the money is the part that The Secret did not mention. And that's where, sorry, Rhonda, sweetheart, but you really didn't earn your $100 million. You have to establish a definite date. By saying, I'm going to wash my hair eventually. How can you trust that I'm going to have my hair washed by Friday night in time to go to the ball game? Okay, you can't. So you need to establish a definitive date. Okay, and then you need to create a plan, like a hardcore written, and these are my own words, the written part. Because the way our minds work, and yes, I do know, I've studied a whole bunch about this crap. The way our minds work is when we hear something, that's one thing. Hurrah, we've heard it. When you repeat it, not only are you saying it, but you're hearing it again. Oh, okay. When you're writing it down, first you have to think it, then you have to get the motion or the command for your hand to write it down, and then as you're writing it, you're reading it as you're writing it, and then chances are very good that you go back after and read it after it's been written. So that's kind of like four. So, excuse me, if you hear it, see it, think it by reading it in your mind to yourself while you're reading it, write it down, read it while you're writing it, and read it with your eyes and aloud with your mouth and hearing it. See how that works. So then you do that twice a day. You read it aloud twice a day. You read all of those steps. You know, the amount of money exactly that you want or that you intend on having, not that you want, that's different. Wanting something isn't concrete. That's wanting something. I want a drink. It has to be concrete. What you intend on having. Establish a definitive date. This day. What are you going to get? What are you going to exchange for it? You don't hold out your hand in the empty air and expect something in it. You're holding out your hand for something in particular. Okay? If you're any kind of, you don't have to be a scholar to get what I'm saying to you. If you're not getting what I'm saying, sorry, but you're not going to get the rest of this anyway. You should be getting what I'm saying if you think about it. Okay, so all of this, the exact amount, what you intend to do in return for the money, not just to get it, in return for the money. The definitive date is the third thing. A plan. Now this is ready, whether you're ready to move or not. Get the plan. And then you're going to read your statement aloud. He says to do it twice a day. He says to do it in the morning and to do it at night. And not just read it, not just say words. Feel it, think it, see it, imagine. Imagine it's you. Imagine, and don't imagine it's you. This is something that I've gotten from my hypnosis as well. Don't imagine that it's happening to you right now. Imagine that you can see yourself, your future self, third person. You see yourself, not the you that you are. You see yourself in this future. You're supposed to do it at morning. You're supposed to do it at night. I will be doing mine twice in the morning and twice at night. The first time, I'm going to be doing it, and I'm going to be imagining what the people that I'm helping are going to get, how it's going to impact them in a positive way, how it's going to impact the people that they're able to touch in a positive way by helping them work through life's difficulties. The second time I read it through, in the morning and again at night, is going to be how it's going to financially impact me and emotionally. So I'm going to be helping them at no cost to them. And this is blowing people away. They're not understanding it. Why are you giving it to me for free? Why are you doing all this work for free? Yeah, I'm doing something for them. But I'll be getting the attention that I need for my viewership through my listener, right? My listenership. And the last thing I want to say that's pretty important is, because I can feel you asking, if she's had this book for so long, she's had it all this time, why is this time going to be any different? Why is it dog-eared? Why does it have ink scribbles all over in it if she hasn't done anything before now? That's a good question. I can't even give you an answer, because all that I can tell you is that now, maybe it's because of all the studying that I've done. Maybe it's because of a combination of all the books I've read and all of the study of NLP and all of the studying of the hypnotic procedure and the mindfulness that I do and the meditation that I do. Maybe by some weird mixing bowl, all of these things have collided together in my subconscious and finally made sense with each other. That actually kind of makes sense, doesn't it? It just feels right. And it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, that voice, the God voice, the dead people, intuition. It doesn't even really matter where it's coming from. Well, as long as it's not like something evil, like some creepy voice in your house or something. But it's not going to tell you to do something positive anyway. However, allowing me to become the giving tree, right? Shel Silverstein's giving tree. Where I'm not, unlike, where I'm not like the giving tree in the fact that I don't give myself completely. I'm growing spiritually. I'm growing emotionally in spite of giving to other people, in spite of helping countless people. I think maybe just this time is right. Because the secret of success is just understanding ourselves. And knowing when it's okay to just do what we feel is the right thing to do. Getting all of those puzzle pieces and putting them together so that they make freaking sense. And that's what I'm going to do with Waking Lions. Because I feel like my lions are finally waking for real. I sure hope you keep coming back to the show. Because it is time to focus on you. And I'm going to have all kinds of people. People that talk about mindfulness. People that talk about hypnosis. People that talk about steps that they've done. People who've talked about life experiences that they've had and what you might be able to gain from it. You can learn from anything. You should learn from this. With your own Waking Lions.